Welcome back to JK Moto Podcast, a weekly motorcycle podcast for the everyday rider, covering current bike and racing news, specializing in track days, club racing, and great entertainment. We truly do it all. This week, we are brought to you once again by Working Class Customs, which is a custom fabrication shop out of Northern Utah. If you have any further questions on that, please direct them to Cole.
And I'm Cole.
And I'm Easton. We are your two favorite hosts of your favorite weekly motorcycle podcast. I had to do a weird kind of... Did you notice I tested it before I went? If I don't, then I always go the wrong way. Because you're... Anyway. The mirror thing. It's a problem. See?
Mine's right.
Well, to my eyes, you're pointing at the opposite end of the screen.
All right, fair enough.
We'll see. We'll see on the playback. Let us know down in the comments if you're watching on YouTube. If you are watching on YouTube, just know that our podcast go anywhere from a half hour to an hour and a half, sometimes even more than that, but probably not tonight. So if you don't want to sit through all that and watch it, that's fine. Go ahead and click the link down in the description to the RSS feed. Find us on your favorite podcast platform. Give us a follow there. Leave us a review. We would appreciate it. And tell your friends, preferably motorcycle riding friends, but, you know, whatever friends you got.
Friends are friends are friends. How is it living in a place where it doesn't snow? Yeah, I went there already.
Well, that's fine. You know, I was going to give you crap, but I was actually about to ask you, how is it living in a place where you can't ride motorcycles all winter because it snows?
When's the last time you rode a motorcycle?
Three, four weeks ago.
Well, I was single tracking last weekend.
There you go. See? So it's not that much different.
I mean, I just had to drive 5 hours.
Well, you've got a dirt bike. You could ride that in the snow, right?
I don't want to get her dirty like that.
Snow is water.
We're working on making her. She might, depending on what the snow does, she might become a snow bike here shortly.
Uh oh. We doing the snow bike thing?
We're thinking about it.
Okay. All right.
We're thinking about it. I have some options. I have some connections that are going to make that potentially make sense.
I've heard the snow bike thing is different. I have zero experience with that. I don't have a whole lot of dirt bike experience. But I've heard the snow bike thing is not what you would think.
Well, I haven't had the opportunity to ride one yet. Okay. But I'm told that if you like a dirt bike, you will like that more than a snowmobile.
So is the plan to test one out before you swap over, or are you just going to go for it?
I have some connections that build them. So okay. I can maybe get into one for cheaper, easier than somebody might be able to. Mm-hmm. So I've decided if I'm going to take advantage of that. But I have another connection that may allow me to go test ride some off the dealer floor.
Okay. All right.
We're just waiting for the snow to get more than... I know I complain a lot about snow, but so far this year we've been getting skiff melt. So
it is a classic Utah problem. Tons of snow, but not at the same time.
Yeah. It's early. January ain't here yet.
Well, definitely keep us up to date on the snow bike thing. I'm very... always been curious about that myself. I know... I don't remember... if it was actually Skidoo, but some company back in the day made like an actual snow bike, and it wasn't a dirt bike. It was like a bullet bike looking, you know, imagine like an MT-09 looking thing.
I know what bike you're talking about, and no, I'm not imagining MT-09. I'm imagining...
No, am I off on that? It's been a while since I've seen the pictures of it.
I'm imagining more of a, I don't know, I'm leaning heavier into Vespa. But
oh, it wasn't that bad. let's see if I can find it. Oof. Okay. I see why you're saying Vespa. That is not the one that I'm talking about.
All right. Hopefully you're going to put that picture you're looking at up here on the...
Yeah, thing. We'll go ahead and share a screen real quick before we roll our intro. All right. So snowbikes, this is what I was talking about. To get here, I just went to original snow bike. I think the Vespa thing that you were talking about, something along those lines.
No.
That line?
These are all way too modern. All way too modern.
Okay. Well, anyway.
We're in 1960s snow bike.
Let's see what we find. This is going great. This is a good winter topic. We might just spend all... This guy?
They didn't even have metallurgy to make that thing in the 60s.
We have the Hayabusa thing, which I think we've actually talked about on here before.
Now that guy. Those boys, who is that?
That's I don't remember his name, but I know boys, we talked about him. Grind Hard Plumbing
Company. Those boys are from Idaho, right? Yeah.
Let me go back, because the one that I was talking about was it's this thing.
That's pretty modern.
Yeah. No, it wasn't very long ago. I don't see them because I think they were like ridiculously expensive, and everyone liked the dirt bike version more, like this guy here. So anyway, kind of weird, but I know there was a company that they were like, they looked like a snowmobile, but they also kind of looked like a motorcycle, but it wasn't just a dirt bike on your, yeah, because the dirt bikes are Timber Sleds, I guess.
Timber Sleds is a brand.
Okay.
There's about five different major brands at this point. It's become pretty popular in my neck of the woods.
I imagine it kind of makes sense. My biggest question has always been, you know, if I can't afford both, is there a kit where I snap it on for the winter and then I take it back off in the summer?
Yep, that's exactly what a timber sled is.
Okay, so it is pretty easy to swap back and forth. This is something I probably should have done more research on, and then I left the great snowy area and went to a warmer climate, so I kind of just stopped caring about it. So,
interestingly, my understanding, you take a stock dirt bike, 450's a popular bike to do it, four stroke.
Mm-hmm.
Take a 450, you have to put a thermostat on it.
Okay.
And the motor, when you're trying to drive in deep snow, the engine, if you will, doesn't heat up enough because it gets solidly packed in snow all the time.
Yeah.
Which is bad for it, mm-hmm, in multiple ways. So there's a blanket that mounts to the front to keep the snow directly off the engine.
Okay.
You put the track, you put the ski on the front, and yeah, you just swap them out for winter.
That's not too bad.
The people I talk to that ride them say that they don't replace a snowmobile. There's certain snow conditions where they work great, mm-hmm, and certain snow conditions where you'll just wish you had a snowmobile. But
okay. So I'd heard something similar. I think I don't remember who it was, but he had gone and ridden one, and he was pretty big into snowmobiles at the time, but used to be big into motorcycles. So he saw that someone happened to have one. He's like, oh, that's sweet. And he said the weird part was that it stands up on its own because the track is so wide. You still have like a standard snowmobile track in the back. But he also said they're not like a snowmobile when you know, you get the nice deep powdery snow and you're having a lot of fun on a snowmobile if you know how to ride. He said it's not the same, kind of parroting what you already said. It's not the same on these snow bikes. They're not really the best for that, but they do thrive in like something where you're like, man, I wish it was a good powder day. You just pull out the snow bike, you'll have a ton of fun. So
yeah, it'd be interesting. I need one more hobby like a hole in the head, so why not?
There you go. Well, on that note, transitioning away from snow bikes, what do you say we run an intro and maybe we can talk more about snow bikes? I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah, let's do it.
Yesterday at one point, I was in sick.
And we're back.
We're back.
Still talking snow bikes.
Is it still snowing outside?
Yeah, it is.
Oh, it actually is right now for you.
Yeah, it actually is right now.
Oh, all right. It's not for me. It's
53
degrees.
Yeah, we're coming up on Christmas. Christmas spirit just falling right out of the sky.
That's good. You know, it keeps the kids happy, and it's important. You gotta have the snow. Otherwise, what is Christmas, you know?
Oh, I don't care about that. We just need some water so that we can do our summer activities. So I'm excited. I'll bet we queued this up perfectly. And mm-hmm, now Josh Bittinger is gonna come in with a snow bike rider tip. Take it away.
Snow bike rider tip from Josh Bittinger, operating down at MSRH, Bittinger Motorsports, private coaching that builds solid riders through vision-based training. Let's see. He says snow bikes are the best thing on earth, and he wishes it's a one downfall of Texas is that there's not enough snow for a snow bike, but everyone should move out of Texas and go get a snow bike.
Perfect. Thank you for that.
Yeah. On the rail, your actual weekly riding tip from Josh Bittinger. Sorry, Cole, there's no snow mentioned here.
That's right.
He is always bragging about that great weather down in Texas. Anyway, Josh Bittinger, Once again, private coaching that builds solid riders through vision-based training. Josh this week has to say, learn and practice the overtaking areas. It's one thing to learn how to go fast on the regular line. It's another thing to learn the setup and execution of a pass. Ask someone familiar with the track where are the best places to pass and how to set up. Many may simply be outbreaking someone on entry, but there are others that may be easier and or safer. Learn where to give up a little to get drive in another area. Learn where a block pass works and where it doesn't. Figure out where the clean passes are and where the dirty ones are. Each one of these alternative lines takes practice to learn exactly how to overtake safely and confidently. When you go to racing and passing, you should have enough reps to know when to stick it in the gap and when to hold back. Don't just try to do something you've never done before just to get by another rider.
You know, that last part of that tip, I've never done that before, but that's been done to me more than once. That's that last part.
Yeah. Yeah, just kind of, hey, I don't know I if I got this, it. But we're racing now, so I guess it gives me the opportunity to just send it and bend it to win it, huh?
Yeah, and sometimes that's what happens. You watch them go out there and then continue on your merry way.
There is definitely, you know, it's a fine line. Bend it to win it should not ever be the goal, but when you're in a race scenario, I mean, I think you could speak honestly. You know, I'm curious. Have there been times where you're like, I don't know for sure if I have this, but I'm pretty sure I've got this, and I gotta have it because I gotta win.
Yeah, there's definitely those moments.
Kind of cross that line of conservative with go for it.
Yeah, not necessarily comfortable anymore, but it's got to be done.
Yeah.
Got to gauge your risk versus reward. I actually really like that tip because it is, for me personally, one of the it is good to know where to set somebody up, where you can make passes. You learn that following somebody. You can mm-hmm. learn that on the fly when you're following a new rider you haven't followed before, for example. Sometimes you don't have time to wait behind somebody to learn all those things. So you got to maybe push the issue.
Especially in club racing. You know, yes. I don't know about all the tracks around the U.S., but it feels like club racing, we got a lot of races to get through. So the races are pretty quick. Yeah, so you got 7 laps to get out there and get the job done. So you don't have time to sit there and analyze for 15 and then.
Yes, but that being said, one thing I would add to that rider tip, something that I've focused in a lot more on, our co-host is always putting it in my head and mm-hmm. I need to get better at, is sometimes taking, I don't want to say the incorrect line, but sometimes there is a line that you can take that removes the ability of the other rider to take their preferred line.
Yeah.
Which falls under block pass.
A little bit, yep.
A little bit, but I think there's even more to it than that. More to it than just, you know, when somebody says block pass, I always think Rossi, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he's famous for the block pass. But but I think, you know, playing chess instead of checkers, sometimes you can, you know, especially when you followed somebody, you know where they like to go. If you can put your bike there first and they have to choose a new line, especially at a club level.
Yeah, you know, that's kind of going to throw them off and most likely keep them behind you. And possibly. Yeah, and possibly
it's been done to me. It's been done to me more than once. So
how do you, just out of curiosity, how do you combat that? Is that something that, like, when you're out doing practices or warm-ups or whatever, you're testing new lines? Or is it just kind of as you race and you pick different lines because someone does that to you, you're like, oh, this line does actually exist?
I'm just going to answer that quickly without a lot of thought, and answering that quickly would be that's the kind of experience you can almost only get in a race setting.
Okay.
Either a race setting or maybe you're out there with one of your boys fighting back and forth on a track day, I think that's something that's hard to recreate. Just going around like, what if a guy came inside? I could maybe hang out here. What would that look like? I think that's kind of hard to duplicate without the bike actually being there doing it to you.
Yeah, so I guess that makes sense. I kind of want to caveat that. I agree with you 100%. I would say someone with enough discipline or someone with like a team behind them is like, hey, you know, or a coach there, but it kind of goes with what you said anyway. If you got a buddy there to kind of set you up, I think if you were like had the mental capacity and the mental discipline to be like, nope, this is the line I'm going to take because I want to try it. I want to see what's happening. But usually on a track day, we don't really have time for that. There are other people there, like not going
to. On a track day, even in traffic, you can afford to, I don't want to say safely because we're being safe on the race day too, but on a track day, you have time to, it's not as important to get past the person. So you can wait until the timing's just right. You can, you know, those kind of things.
Yeah.
But that's why the learning curve gets sped up so quick.
Mm-hmm.
When you start racing, is you're forced to do those things in real time. And you start learning faster. Yeah. You don't just ride through the corner. You figure out how to get by that guy in the corner.
Yeah, and then on to the next one.
I think back to doing track days for however long and knowing that if you were offline, and maybe not just track day versus racing, but more novice rider versus more experienced rider. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a line that you want to be on. That never changes. There's always a line you want to be on, yeah. But your comfortability, is that a word?
Yep. Comfortability. Yep.
Your comfortability with like on the fly going, this is where I want to be, but situation deems that I need to be over here and I'm completely comfortable with that. And being able to move around on the racetrack, multiple lines.
Yeah. And still being able to hold a decent pace.
Yes.
On all those different lines.
I think once you start learning to be comfortable with moving around different race lines, that's when the growth starts to accelerate.
The growth. Yeah. Yeah. That still reminds me that the one track that we did down in Chuckwalla. I don't know. I know I mentioned this recently, but I don't know if it was on the podcast or just out and talking to people, but this guy, he had followed me around for a couple laps. He came past me. He had a vest on, you know, so he's control rider down there, taps his tail. So I follow him around and I was sticking with him pretty good. Right. He was just showing me a couple spots, like pointed out like, hey, here's the apex, not where you were. I was 3 feet off or whatever. I was like, okay, cool. Pointed out a couple things. And then he like looked back, gave me a thumbs up and then kind of left and took off. And as he took off, he noticed the cameraman was on the outside of the corner we're coming through. And there's a pretty long left-hand corner. So in the middle of that turn, he like takes his left hand off of the inside of the bar with the bike fully leaned over. And in my head, we were cooking, right? Like I was following this coach, this control rider through, and we were moving fast. Puts himself back up in the middle of the bike. Doesn't change his actual like trajectory in the corner at all, and goes over and flips the bird to the cameraman middle of the turn. Meanwhile, I'm hanging on for dear life, hoping to make it through this thing because we're going faster than I've been all morning. I was like, I've got a long ways to go. Like in that moment, I realized I had a long, long ways to go, but that's the goal, you know, get there. Eventually we'll get there. Yeah. Learn where to pass safely and learn where it's easier. And I think our addition to that is learn to get comfortable with multiple lines. The more comfortable you are anywhere on the racetrack, the faster you can be in a race scenario. It is not necessarily the fastest lap time, but it is what it takes to win races. So
I think it's safer when you start getting some pace. If you only have one line that you're comfortable doing.
Yeah. The minute you get off that, you're done. It's over.
Yeah. It starts to get dangerous again.
Well, and then you're more likely also, like if you get off the line a little bit, you're more likely to kind of cut over where maybe you shouldn't, because there is still that aspect of it, right? Be comfortable on any line, which also means sometimes hold your line because you know that you shouldn't cut over right now. You're not responsible for the people behind you. However, it's part of getting that whole race license as being a predictable rider. You don't want to just and cut over to the other side of the track. That's not where you are.
Yeah. Elish.
I thought we were talking to Alex Marquez.
All of the above.
Wait, no, it was Bagnaia that did it too.
Marquez. Bagnaia has never done something like that.
You're right.
So
perfect.
Oh, well, thank you, Josh. I like
the
tip.
For the tip. Thanks for the tip. Thank you.
And on that note, sorry, I had to say, Jorge Martin says that the Aprilia has taken the biggest step in a single offseason. The changes to this new bike are more than that bike has ever made before. And I was like,
Didn't someone say that last year?
Somebody says that every year about every bike, probably.
I was going to say, it was like about a Honda.
But my God, we heard it again, and I was like, you know what? The only thing they did was the rider mod.
It is the biggest leap in recent years.
So yeah, I seen today on the gram. I was gonna shoot it to you, but your dream has come true. You can buy winglets for your bike that modulate. The faster you go, the further they come into the bike, and you slam on the brakes, and they're back out again. It's true. I seen them.
What? I didn't know that. I was not aware that that came into fruition yet. What? Can you give me a brand? I want to see. I gotta see it.
I have to find it. It's an aftermarket company that's just selling winglets for different bikes.
What do MotoGP winglets do?
MotoGP winglets don't do that. That's illegal. That's something they got outlawed.
Yeah, I'm trying to. I just Googled modulating motorcycle winglets. It's not bringing anything up yet. But okay, so you're saying.
So you want winglets for your downforce and all that kind of good stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But apparently, when you want to go super fast, you got to fold them babies in like an F-14 Tomcat.
Once the bike's going fast enough, it's good. That's so weird because the winglets that are on my current bike, and yes, I have them on there. I had the option to take them off when I put the race fairings on, and I chose to put them back on. I think they look cool. That is all. Because Aprilia came out and said they will provide an amount of downforce over 156 miles an hour. Up to that point, but it's really not. They're not going to do anything, which kind of cracked me up because I was like, well, even like a great racer, you know, on most tracks in the U.S., how much time are you really spending over 156 miles an hour?
As much as possible would be the answer.
Sure, yeah. But you're also spending as little time as possible racing if you want to win. So
that's true. That is true.
The whole goal of what we do is to spend the least amount of time doing what we do.
So did you go watch the show I told everybody to watch 2 weeks ago?
Not yet. I have not. No, sorry.
Because I got corrected in the comments on how I was pronouncing it, and I actually appreciated the comment because when I seen it, I knew that actually, but
it's one of those things.
Yeah. It's just one of those things, but I, not to make this the movie review show, the F1 movie review show, but I finally seen Driven with Sylvester Stallone.
I'm familiar with it. I have not seen that one.
Oh my God. Don't watch that one.
Okay. I wasn't planning on it. There's only four Sylvester Stallone movies that I like.
Oh, no, man, Sylvester Stallone's awesome. Just not that movie.
I can't imagine him doing F1. You know, like wrestling, boxing, being some crazy man that runs through a jungle.
He's Italian.
Yeah, but he's...
If he can get his muscles in that car, why shouldn't he be able to drive it?
Yo, Adrian. Gosh. We got the Aprilia.
Like, all right, we got some news, though.
I agree. Hit us with it. What do we got? Dave, before we get into that, I do want to put out while Cole's pulling up the news. One, Merry Christmas to everyone. We are not going to put out a podcast next week because it would be Christmas Day. We want everyone to, you know, go enjoy their holiday with their family or their snow bikes out in the woods, depending on what you're doing. Whichever one is for you. Or, you know, if it's not snowing, you can also go enjoy a dirt bike or a racetrack. Anyway, enjoy your Christmas. We're going to take the week off so we can be with our families or out in the woods snow biking, depending on what Cole decides. And we will hit back the week after that for our end of year recap. So be on the lookout for that, but we will not see anyone next week on here. And then we'll get back into it. And then we'll start rolling into the 2025 JK Moto season, which will be nuts. Looking forward to it.
Yuck.
Anyway,
Yamaha news.
Yamaha news. Got it.
Did you have Yamaha news? Moto America. Yamaha. Did you say that Cam Peterson kind of quietly weeks ago was no longer part of the Yamaha team?
I didn't see that weeks ago. The news that I saw was the Yamahas with the the winglets on them. But
no, that's old news. That's old news. So Cam Peterson quietly disappeared.
Yep. Okay.
Good luck to him. I haven't seen where he's going or what he's doing yet. But today, Yamaha wanted to have their Moto America lineup officially out.
Mm-hmm.
And we have the return of Jake Gagne, of course.
No one would have guessed that one.
And sitting alongside him is none other than Bobby Fong.
Mm-hmm. Bobby Fong, the man that was on the
Wrench Yamaha,
which was technically a privateer bike.
Yep.
Last year.
Well, it was a team. It's not a factory bike. It was a team. It's not.
Okay, so not factory support. I thought someone said privateer, and that was throwing me off all season because, yeah. But anyway, okay, not non-factory Yamaha team.
And so he has now made his way up. Depending on where you draw that line, and not to irritate somebody, but depending on where you draw that line, privateer
shouldn't have any sponsors.
Well, everybody has sponsors, right? Everybody has some sponsor. I mean, even if it's your uncle or your wife or whatever. I mean, everybody's got sponsors at some level.
Your own wallet.
But I think, you know, from a privateer standpoint, that term mostly comes from factory or non-factory.
Which, to break that down further, would be factory support, like the Yamaha team, right? So the team Bobby Fong was on last year
was not a Yamaha factory team.
Yeah, it was just a team that was running a Yamaha bike, i.e. Yeah. Our great friend and guest host, Lugnut, runs a Kawasaki, but he's not on a Kawasaki team, per se. Okay. That's how we're defining that. All right. I like that. I can get him on board.
So Big Bad Bobby Fong got him a quote-unquote factory ride.
Mm-hmm.
Factory superbike. So it'd be interesting to see what he can do. He had a very, very successful year last year.
That's not saying he was doing good. Honestly, I mean, I'd say he was giving Josh Herron more of a run for his money than Gagne was. So,
well, for sure, this past season, Gagne was dealing with some injuries, arm pump issues.
The classic.
Classic arm pump issues. So that was neat. But more importantly,
mm-hmm.
to finish out the Yamaha lineup, you know, we have Matthew Schultz.
Yeah.
Mr. Schultz.
Yeah.
Mr. Schultz. What did he ride last year?
A Ducati, I believe. V2.
Dude. Yamaha R6. R6. Come on.
Was it?
Come on. You even watch the races?
Nope. Super Sport? Nope. I didn't. I just didn't. Sorry.
It's really disappointing.
I thought he was on the V2 for some odd reason. I apologize for that. All right. Yeah. Matthew Schultz. That makes more sense. R6, because the team he was racing with before had some sad news last year. It was way back. So, yeah. Okay. Up to date.
Yeah, that was 2 years ago. Or
yep. Year and a half. Anyway, yeah.
Yes. So he's the reigning champion. He won on his R6. And why would Yamaha continually be out there trying to support a bike that they haven't made in a lot of years at this point? So Yamaha announced that both Blake Davis and himself, or Matthew Schultz, both of them will be racing the new R9.
Okay, in the Super Sport Championship.
In the Super Sport Championship. So when I start thinking about that, I say that is the crippling official death of the R6 in the professional motorcycling arena in the United States.
Well, I'd...
Well, there's still a lot of R6s, you know, when you...
Yeah.
Obviously, at a club level, the R6 is amazing. R6 is everywhere.
I was just going to say the world, I would guess. I don't know. I mean, British Superbike, Australian Superbike. I don't know. I don't follow them. I apologize. There's only so much room in our weekly podcast. But...
So, anyway, they've made the switch, though. So, both the... I mean, that's also the Attack Yamaha team still. So they're going to be on R9s. That'll be quite interesting.
The beloved R9. I mean, as soon as I saw the R9 and I was going over the specs, it made sense. It made sense. And the interesting part to me with that would be the price of it compared to an R6. I'm pretty sure it's not like it costs more money.
Well, what was the price on it? I found, for all those looking for an R6, our local ads have there's one floating on there right now for $9,000, I think it was. for like a 09.
Okay. So not the newest generation.
It's a, 08 or 09. They're asking $9,000 for it. It's got 2,000 original miles on it.
There you go. That's not bad.
And it says all the service has been meticulously done. And I thought, well, technically, you haven't had to change the oil yet.
No, you're supposed to do the first 500-mile change. Well,
so they change the oil once.
Break and change, yeah.
I mean, it's been sitting there for 12 years or whatever, but.
Yeah, just to put that in, 2019 is the year I went for with the R6. MSRP was $12,199. The 2025 R9 MSRP is $12,499. So a whopping $300 more. So like I said, that's kind of been my, the whole thing. I was trying to talk a buddy of mine into buying one the other day. As he said, he was looking to get a sport bike again. And I was like, man, you know, he's a Yamaha guy. And I was like, the R1 and the R6 are kind of going out, but the R9 does look pretty sweet. So definitely sad to see the others go. But so my question for you, since you sound a little bit more up to date, and maybe I just need to do more research on it, and I can bring that later. But if we're running the R9 now, got some more CCs. I don't know if we really have that much more horsepower, but are we going to be able to stop tuning down some of the other bikes? Or is the R9 still too small in horsepower?
No. I mean, they'll still balance them all. I don't know how that... I haven't looked at the numbers side by side to see how that backs up with the elusive V2.
Yeah. I mean, last time I heard, the R9 does not have an official horsepower number for the U.S. yet, still. But I think there was... I read on... It was like a Reddit thread I was reading. It was posted somewhere else in the world, maybe over in Europe. And it wasn't that much more than the R6 or the MT09, sadly. So... kind of a bummer there. We got a bigger bike, and I was really hoping they would step up the game just a little bit so the 750s and the V2s didn't have to be tuned down so bad. But
yeah, I'm going to hold out. Yamaha, if you're listening, I'm holding out for the R15. Oof. Whatever that is.
150 cc's?
It'll probably be the Busa killer, the R15.
Yeah, inline 7.5.
I don't know. I'm just saying, though, there. If anybody needed the signal, there's the signal. Everybody's always wondering if the how long they were going to keep bringing R6s out there. And if you get the defending champion to switch, which why wouldn't you? If you're Yamaha, you know, you're not going to sell many more R6s by winning championships.
Yeah, not new ones anyway.
Not new ones.
Club racers will keep buying used ones all day, but.
And they probably will for the next 25 years, but.
Yeah, it's not going to change. The R6 was a great bike. It you know, the saddest part is, sure, we're losing the R6, but I just think about, like, Ducati, the V2 is not. I'm going to miss it. 600cc, inline 4, 16,000 RPM or more. No power till you're at the top of it, and then it absolutely wrecks you. And it's sad to see it go. The newer bikes that we're getting are getting more electronics, and that's kind of here or there, depending on what you feel. Had a lot of conversations with a lot of people. I think it was coming, so there's no really getting around it. You can complain about it, but it was coming. The power delivery being more predictable and manageable is what the public has shown they want, and so that's what the manufacturers are doing. Also, I think that's easier to handle all this crazy emissions equipment that they're required to have.
Well, So I would argue with what you just said, because I'd say you said it in the wrong order. Emissions first, because emissions are driving the manufacturers to make the bikes that they're making. The public didn't love them initially, but the factories have to be smart enough to figure out a way to make you fall in love with them. And then the full switch will come, where they'll be... when you're as old as me and you've seen the world turn a couple times, you'll know.
Here we go. All right, everyone sit back. Crack one open.
I mean, I've been through it all. There's still people that swear two-stroke up and down, and two strokes will never die. And there's always going to be those five guys that are out there touting the old-school two-stroke. I'm not talking these new, you know, reincarnation of two-strokes that are coming out. I mean, the traditional old school two stroke. That thing, there were some people that were never going to switch. It eventually switched. I mean, maybe we'll see that with electric cars. I mean, every day I running into more and more people that are actual fans of electric cars. It used to be embarrassing. You know, you had this one guy trying to justify his existence and why he drove an electric car. And now that switch has turned to where there's a whole genre of people that are, my electric car's cooler than your car.
Yeah.
And we're seeing that switch right now with this. And I'm, there's always going to be some people hanging on. I mean, there's still people that are hanging on to the two-stroke MotoGP days. And
that's true. That's been a minute.
Yeah. And I'm not saying that that's wrong or right, but that's just, that's the nature of things.
Yeah.
The generations will come and they'll dictate. And
it'll be, you know, the only other interesting part with that though, and something I forget who I was talking to about it, but Euro emission standards specifically are the ones that are killing all these manufacturers.
Yeah,
it seems to be hitting the non-European manufacturers a lot harder. And I've been wondering how much that's having an effect, like Ducati and Aprilia not having as much trouble per se, maybe. And I'm not sure on the sales front. I don't have that info in front of me. But, you know, them with KTM, well, and KTM is a different story because their financial situation at the moment. But, you know, they're not, they should be able to get that info very quickly. They should. In theory, if I was building motorcycles and my country was the most like restrictive on emission standards, I would want to know from that EPA or whoever it is that runs it over in Europe, like, hey, I'm going to send a guy over. You're going to give me your updates of your plans for next year because I want to be compliant with your plans. I'm not trying to change anything. I just want to make sure my bikes are compliant and I can continue to make bigger, better, badder bikes that the public wants. Meanwhile, Japan's like, hey, check out this bike. And then Euro 5's like, hey, your exhaust is too small. And so they got to redesign and come up with something. And
So think about that for a minute, though. Just imagine, come with me on a trip.
Okay.
If you were to walk into your Kawasaki dealership right now and look at a Kawasaki 636, that thing is going to have an exhaust, a silencer, the slip-on that is bigger than a freaking bike is. Right. Yeah. It's just this massive, massive thing that goes in the garbage on day two.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just because the UPS man didn't stop at your house. But now picture that you did a YouTube video recently on the Aprilia 660.
Yes, correct.
Look at the exhaust on a stock Aprilia 660. The thing is cut off at the, it doesn't even protrude past the rear wheel.
Yeah, it's built into the belly pan area. It's
built in the belly pan. Mm-hmm. The pipe on that Kawasaki mentioned is bigger than the belly pan on an Aprilia. So they're not cramming that in there. But what's the difference between those two bikes? One of them is still a high revving inline four.
Yeah.
And one of them is a V2.
A parallel twin. Yeah.
That big giant thing they're shoving on there is to get that inline four to pass emissions.
Yeah. So you're saying it is possibly just the engine itself cannot hang anymore.
Well, it can't hang without making pollution.
Anyway, yeah. It's just nuts. It's sad to see. We talked about it, I think it was probably almost a year ago now that we talked about, you know, the death of the 600cc, and it is sad to hear that news. I agree with you. If Moto America, one of the last big classes in the world to be running the R6s.
Yeah, if they're gone from there, that was the last holdout.
Yeah. Yeah, it's over. It's over. But it does kind of open up also, you know, will we see Triumph maybe actually release a 765? So we had the Triumph 765 Moto 2 that came in limited quantity. Is Triumph going to maybe kind of come up with that also, or re-come up with that and bring it back out to enter the game? Can we see a couple other manufacturers kind of start to enter this game now? But it also it's still so weird to me because we still have the twins class, and now we're still going to have the super sport class, but we also still have to have like a super ultra mega lightweight class for only the Ninja 400s, and then there's the fan favorite Ninja 400 RR that doesn't have a class at all and apparently is blowing up all over the world. So, you know, I don't know.
It's something everybody's battling. I don't see it getting better in the near future.
Yeah, probably not. Probably not. But
I remember a simpler day where they just said, hey, why don't you make a 600? Okay.
Yeah.
That's your cutoff. I mean, that's how it always was, though. I mean, not really, but kind of, yes. I mean, if you look at, that's a whole nother tangent. I mean, dirt bikes.
Mm-hmm.
Even in dirt bikes, you had the 125s and the 250s.
Yep.
You know, your top tiers in the two-stroke days. Mm-hmm. And then they even played around with 500s for a minute, but it was pretty easy. Like, here's a 250, here's a 125, here's this class, here's that class. And the 450s come out, and it's still fairly simple, right? They got a 450 as the top tier class. But even in those classes, you're starting to get more and more bikes that are coming in. What about the new Ducati? When do they start trying to balance the new Ducati dirt bike?
Yeah, I don't know. I haven't looked at that since we talked about it forever ago. I don't remember.
They won the European Championship over there.
I don't even remember like what size it is.
It's a 450, but it's 450. It's Desmo Dici drive. Oh, yeah. It doesn't have springs.
The Desmo 450.
So I mean, there's a lot of things they can do. There's some disadvantages to that, but there's a lot of advantages to that. But you're going to start getting into more and more. We gotta limit the playing field. We gotta make everybody on the same page. And
yeah, that's that's the worst part. And I guess that's what you're kind of getting at. Yeah, keeps it exciting and entertaining. Keeps it from just whoever's got the most money wins the race. The nice part about it, you know, is that it does even the playing field on the bikes, and so you do get a more accurate depiction of the best rider. But it limits the ability to have like the best all around, where you have a rider and a team that works so freaking well together. I mean, it's like the Yamaha Rossi pair up back in the day. He tried out other manufacturers, never did as well, but him and Yamaha just meshed.
Well, it forces, I mean, at least in like the dirt bike world, you have a range that you can play in with all the stuff around it. It forces suspension companies to get better, forces tire companies to get better.
Yeah, that's true.
Forces all the things around to be better instead of just let's throw twice as much horsepower as the guy next to me. And
forces Ducati to finally build a motorcycle that can handle.
Yeah, yeah.
Kicking it down the straight just isn't quite working. Yeah.
So that's my Yamaha news. What you got over there?
I don't have a whole lot of news this week. Damn, man, you reminded me of something earlier. I should have wrote it down. You were talking about Jorge. Oh, I was going to bring up Toprak. Toprak. I just read an article today that reminded me of Toprak. He is riding with BMW again, but he just got asked in another interview, re-brought up the fact that he is looking for MotoGP. He is recognizing he is old, but he's not like... He said something along the lines of, if it's not the right contract, he'll stick with World Superbike. So
that reminds me, how shameful of you and all your Gixxer prowess to not bring up all the rumor mills about Suzuki coming back.
One, I did bring up the rumor mill a couple weeks ago about Suzuki coming back to MotoGP. So, just to clear the air there, I did bring that up. I've seen the rumors, and they kind of disappeared as of late. Have they started resurfacing?
I think they're growing.
Okay.
So, you know, we've all kind of said, man, wouldn't it be cool if Kawasaki came back? Wouldn't it be cool if, you know, all these people? And I've been saying, you heard it here first, you know, a year and a half ago, BMW will be in MotoGP.
MotoGP.
But when, not sure. I know that is a huge goal of theirs, but Suzuki is now a front runner as well. But the articles I've been reading are, it's not that simple. Suzuki and BMW can want to come back, but unless they can convince a team in the paddock to switch teams.
Because the grid's full.
The grid's full.
Mm-hmm.
Minus two, maybe. The ones KTM were trying to get last year.
Yeah.
Or did they? Yeah. It doesn't matter. Anyway, they've got to convince somebody to switch. And if you're on Team Ducati, why would you switch? So we've seen a couple Ducatis fall off the grid this year.
Yeah, I mean, that's the question. What does get someone to switch? I mean, Prima Pramac had they had the best wheel deal with Ducati. You know, it won them a championship this year. It got them runner-up last year.
Yeah, and they have switched.
They swapped over. So it can't be that much money.
So I would think that at some point, like I say on here all the time, you gotta. I don't think it was completely a money deal. Anyway, I think that Dorna has to force that issue without irritating Ducati, because I've always said, for all you Ducati haters out there, Ducati has single-handedly helped the sport float as the popularity has kind of come back by doing what they've done.
I'll give you that.
But it is time for every team to eventually be weaned down to a factory team and a satellite team.
Yep. Not four teams with eight riders.
Yes, I agree with that. So if it's not Dorna's fault that happened, but they've got to find a politically correct way to wean it back down.
Mm-hmm.
Pramac was a step in the right direction that way. You bring BMW and Suzuki back in.
Yeah, it's just, you know, then we're stepping into the door of not every team having a satellite team either, unless we do add more bikes to the grid. My question would be, if we're going down to these 850cc bikes, can we add more bikes to the grid? Are we, like, do we actually have a full grid? Is that a safety full grid, or is it a Dorna's out of money full grid?
Dorna says they want to keep it at 22 bikes.
Interesting.
And I think they can fit 24. Come on.
Yeah. Plus, they're going to get slower. That's the whole point. We can fit more. We could have 40 bikes out there going down the main street.
Well, 22 might be a good number, but they're not taking into account that Joan Mir only does one lap. So,
yeah, there's never actually 22 bikes.
Yeah, I mean, it's guaranteed to be 21 by the time the first lap ends anyway.
Yeah, and then Marquez will take three more people out.
Well, that's true.
So,
I think his New Year's resolution is not to take everybody out. Him and Bagnaia have been playing awful nice.
It's 2024 still.
I understand, but in the media.
He's actually technically still contracted with Gresini right now.
Well, they keep throwing softballs at each other. Like, I think Bagnaia said something along the lines of Mark Marquez is his inspiration now for coming back and trying to get his championship back.
That's an interesting way of saying, yeah, that's funny. Okay. That'll be good. I am looking forward to the games this next year. I know we've kind of already talked about it the past few weeks. I'm looking forward. I'm ready for the games coming into MotoGP. We got a couple months. Hopefully I'll have a few motorcycle riding days in those couple months. I don't know how much I'll actually get, but
hey, when's the Daytona 200?
The actual date? Not sure. It's in March.
In February? 1st of March?
I think it's March. Let's see. Daytona.
I just got to figure out how many more days I got to wait. Maybe it's the end of March.
March 8th, looks like.
It's supposed to be a big one.
Yep, March 6th through the 8th, 2025.
Might have to accidentally be in Florida.
How does one accidentally be in Florida?
I've done it before.
All right.
I think most people who live in Florida accidentally went to Florida once.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of hurricanes down there. But, you know, you can tell the difference between someone that accidentally went to Florida and someone that's from Florida by how they handle a hurricane. Most of them just, like, shut the door. And
shut the door and put a rug against the inside.
Yeah, but it's crazy. I don't know where the news companies always get their clips of all the water, because I've got friends with parents in, like, in the Keys. A big old hurricane comes through. I'm like, your parents good? And it's like, yeah, you know, yard's a little wet. Okay. I mean, oh, anyway, we're not a weather channel, but I'm looking forward to a full report on this snow bike adventure. I'm hoping you carry that out, and I'm looking forward to hear more about snow bikes.
We'll see if we can fit it in between the dirt and the asphalt that's right around the corner.
There we go. Just a little bit of snow. Then you got, all you need after that is a water bike.
I got one of those, kind of.
Yeah, I was thinking about that. That's like the closest thing. They don't really have water bikes, but if I was going to call something a water bike, it would be.
But they used to. While you're finding a better picture of the old school snowmobiles, you'll find a water bike.
Okay.
They used to have them.
I'm trying to imagine. I couldn't be that bad.
Single ski on the front, just like a snowmobile would. And they had kind of a track.
Yeah, I mean, it's like a self-propelled water ski, basically.
Sure.
The weird part is that you go into the water, just like the snow, you go into it. The dirt, you can kind of go into, but not like water and snow.
Well, that's the good thing about the water and the snow, is that you can go into them, and it's not a hard stop. Like this podcast is going to have right now.
And on that note, it's time to end.
Yeah, see? Say yep.
There you go.
All right. Thanks for coming. Thanks for listening. Come back next time.
In 2 weeks, we will see you again. You guys enjoy your Christmas. Happy holidays. Thank you.
See ya.